This audio is brought to you by Medjugorje.org.
The following is a talk given by Father Donald Calloway in fall of 2009.
In 1992, my life changed radically, and the person that you see here sitting before you was in no way the person that was in that image of the long hair, the hippie, the guy that was wild. I had a profound conversion experience in 1992 after hitting rock bottom in my life. I went through just about everything a young man could go through up until the age of 20. Starting when I was a little boy of about 12 years old, I started doing drugs. Now, mind you, I wasn't a Catholic. Nobody in my family was a Catholic. We had no religion whatsoever. My mother had been married 3 times. And currently she was living with her husband, who was my stepfather, a good man, but no, not religious at all. When I was 10 years old, when they married, he was baptized an Episcopalian. So I was baptized because he became my stepfather. I received his last name, Calloway, my last name that comes from him. But all I remember from my baptism when I was 10 years old were the donuts. I have no recollection of my baptism whatsoever. I just know that I have the certificate and that it was done and there were witnesses. And so when my mother married this third husband, this third man, nothing came of it spiritually. As a matter of fact, the family was very secular, very hedonistic, living for pleasure. He was a military officer, and we started moving all around the world. Every 2 to 3 years, we moved to a different location. And I think I attribute that constant shifting and having no religion of any kind in my life to just a down spiral in my life. And we were living in Virginia Beach at that time when I was baptized. We moved to California, Southern California, and I was 11 years old. My life went down the tubes at that point. I started using drugs, started being sexually active, started drinking, started skipping school, going to the beach all the time, smoking, all that kind of stuff, partying and all that at age 11. And it just escalated to the point of it got out of control. And so we moved to a different location in California, near Los Angeles, and it continued. My lifestyle continued. And then my dad, I'll call him dad, he was my stepfather, he got a new assignment in the Navy. He was in the Navy. And we were supposed to move every 2 to 3 years. And he said one day, we're going to move to Japan. And I remember the impact of that statement in my heart, even as a young boy. I was almost going on 14 at that time. And it rocked my world. Everything that I had come to know as a young man, you know, the girls, the drugs, the alcohol, the, you know, beach lifestyle in Southern California was going to be taken away from me. And we were going to move to this foreign country where I knew nothing about it, thought that my paradise had been taken away. And so I rebelled. And I didn't want to go, but what was I going to do? I was so young, you know, you have to go. So I went. And as soon as we got in Japan, I told myself, I will be a living hell for my parents. Because they took me out of my everything that I loved, that I wanted. And I began to rebel from day one. And I got involved with the wrong crowd, with a bunch of American kids who were living over there. And I started doing drugs unbelievable. Opium, heroin, drinking a lot. Alcohol was a given. That was every day. And I started doing everything that I could get my hands on over there. I would even do stupid things like cough syrup, huffing gasoline, all those kinds of things. And I got very, very sexually active. And I was very young. You know, I'm 14 years old at this point, and I'm experiencing all the sinful sides of life. And that lifestyle just escalated to the point where I literally ran away in Japan. I left my parents. They were living on a military base. And I fled and just ran around the main island of Japan, Honshu, with a friend who ran away with me. And we were committing what would be felonies here in the United States, stealing massive amounts of money, automobiles, mopeds, many, many things. Here in the United States, you do something like that, you do, you know, some serious time. over there, I was 15 years old, running loose, doing my own thing with my friend. And we stayed gone for about 2 months. And we were living the high life. Even got involved with the Yakuza, which is the Japanese mafia. Not doing big things, but doing little things for them at like casinos and stuff like that. Running around with women, unbelievable lifestyle. Just living my own way. And I had no concern about anything, anybody. My mother, my father, and they had a son. And his name was Matthew, is Matthew. And I didn't care about them. I didn't care at all. It was all about me, all about Don Calloway. And I wanted to satisfy everything I could sensually in my life. And if that meant, you know, sleeping with a different girl every night, then so be it. Going to discotheques, throwing money, you know, away on drugs and alcohol, so be it. I didn't care. I just lived for the moment. Now, the interesting thing is that during that whole time, my mother, who is full-blooded Italian, Lucita Bianco was her name. It's amazing she wasn't Catholic already or had some kind of religion. She literally had a breakdown because of her son, me. Her maternal heart was broke, shattered, and she as a mother and as a woman was dying, crushed, because where's her son? And she knew what I had been going through for years, coming from California to Japan, and now I was gone. Where is he? Is he dead? What's going on? Well, she went because they lived on a military base, and she wanted to just talk to a chaplain, anyone who was there. It could have been a Protestant, a rabbi, a Muslim cleric, whomever. She just wanted to talk to someone spiritual to get some advice about this pain that she was suffering as a mother. Well, thank the Lord, the priest that was the only person that was there that day was a Roman Catholic priest in the chaplain office, and he was a good priest. And she listened to what he had to say as she poured out her heart and her concerns and her, you know, dying. And she loved what he had to say. She consumed it. She went home, told my father about it, and that started their process of conversion to Catholicism. Now, I didn't know any of that. I would only find out about that, you know, years later, months and years later. It didn't mean anything. Even if I would have known, it would have meant nothing. I cared nothing about religion, especially the Catholic Church. You know, it all seemed just odd to me, weird, occult. Well, the point came where I was committing felonies and they were seeing this Caucasian boy running from the scene of the crime. And so they started to track me down. And during that, my mother had to leave the country. She had to come back to the United States without her son and find a place to live in the United States once they caught me. That broke, that crushed her. And one of the first things that she did when she came back to the United States was to go to a Catholic priest here and to follow up with that conversion process. She was not yet Catholic at that point. It was all new. I stayed gone doing crazy things, but eventually it got so bad and was almost causing an international scene that they tapped the phone lines to the military base where my dad was at. And me, being the person that I was calling my friends all the time, telling them, we just, you know, robbed another place. Come, we'll give you some money. We'll give you the guitars we stole, the drum sets, the whole thing. Well, they were smart enough, the military police, to know that I would be doing those kinds of things. So they tapped the phone lines, and they found out that I was going to meet my friends at a certain location, and they caught me and my friend we had run away together. And I remember being caught, and I remember being enraged. Once again, everything that I loved was taken away from me. All the girls that I knew in Japan, and I had many, and all the things that I was doing, the lifestyle that I loved, was taken away from me once again. And I remember spitting in the face of the military police. I had the most foul language you could possibly imagine. At that point, I had the hair down to about here, and I'm only 15 years old at this point. And I was just completely wild. And they knew that I was. And so they literally had to handcuff me to my friend at our ankles. They had to shackle my arms, and at the other times I was handcuffed with my other foot to the chair I was sitting on, because if at any opportunity I would bolt, and I was fast, and they wouldn't be able to catch me. Well, one time I manipulated them, asked to use the restroom, and I ran away, and I was gone for not even a full day, running around trying to escape, hid in a sewer actually, trying to get away. But eventually they caught me, got me back, and handcuffed me, shackled me, and everything. And literally kicked me out of the country of Japan. I was kicked out of Japan, literally. Had I been over the age of 18, I would have been prosecuted in that country, and who knows what would have become of that. But they kicked me out, both the government and our military there. And they stamped something in my passport to the effect of get him out in Japanese, basically, you know, rejected more or less. And when we left the country, they knew that I was so bad, they didn't know what I would do. Would he jump out of the plane? Would he do something stupid? They literally handcuffed me to the plane as we left. We went from Honshu, the main island, to Hawaii, and I was handcuffed. When we got down into the airport in Hawaii to change planes, I had to walk through shackled, the airport, a 15-year-old kid walking through with like four military police around me, shackled, as we went through Honolulu airport. Then we flew, handcuffed once again to the plane and to a military police officer to LAX, Los Angeles International. And once I got there, because I was under the age of 18 and everything that I had done was in another country, there was no, I couldn't be prosecuted in this country for what I had done. I wasn't of age and it wasn't on this land. So they basically said to me, your father, my stepfather, has custody of you. We can't prosecute you. Do you promise to go with him to see your mother in Pennsylvania, where she was living, and she had bought a home or was in the process of buying it, preparing, you know, for a new life? Do you promise to go with him? And I said, yeah, sure, I'll go. Well, I thought about leaving because I still had many friends in California, and I had met many people that I could easily have, you know, left and ran away and been doing the things that I wanted to do. But for some reason, I didn't, and I went with my dad, and we flew to Pennsylvania, and I saw my mother for the first time in about a little over 2 months, and of course, she cried her eyes out, just, you know, exuding maternal love and affection and concern and care. And what did I do? Looked her right in the eye and said, I hate you. And I was just, I hated my parents. I hated everybody. I even hated myself, though I wouldn't have said it. It was all about me. Everything was about me. And I didn't have any idea of religion. Nothing. Nada. Not an inch of religion in my life. And I went to this rehabilitation center. Not of my own free will. It was kind of an agreement that though we can't prosecute you, you will go into a rehab. And so I did. And that was in Altoona, Pennsylvania. And that didn't work. Because I didn't go there of my own free will, I relapsed in the rehab, ran away from the rehab, got caught, learned how to do more drugs that I wasn't exposed to in Japan in the rehab. It was a mess. Was there for about half of a summer. Got out. The next day, when I moved back in with my parents, they thought everything would be fine. He got help. He got, you know, therapy or whatever, counseling. No, it didn't work. That very night, I drank a whole bottle of vodka, started right where I left off. Got introduced to the, you know, girls in the town and all of that. Looked for the friends who were the outcasts. Looked for the people that I could cling to that would bring me back into that environment that I wanted. And sure enough, if you look hard enough, you'll find it. And I did. And so the whole thing started again. Now, during that whole time, my mother, my father, and my half-brother, Matthew, became Catholic. And I knew that there was a change in them. My mother was different. She wasn't screaming anymore. She wasn't enraged at my coming home drunk and, you know, in a stupor, stoned out of my mind on these drugs, or when I would just leave the house for a week and not come back. When I would come back, she was different. Upset, certainly, as a mother, but she was changed. And I didn't attribute that to the religion. I just thought, well, who knows? You do your thing, I'll do mine. I just need to take advantage of you to get what I want. And so the religion meant nothing to me. The fact that they had become Catholic meant nothing. Actually, I remember a couple times criticizing them about it, because they started putting my brother into a Catholic school. And I thought that was odd because they made him dress, you know, with a white shirt and a black pants, and I thought that was like a cult or something. Well, my life continued. Got involved very sexually, even more so than I was in Japan, with many girls. Started using drugs, as I said, that I never used in Japan. Started using LSD, heroin, crack, cocaine, mushrooms, uppers, downers, everything you could possibly imagine, and I did this stuff daily, every day. I didn't have an identity left. I mean, everything was melting to me. You know, it came to a point where in those days there was a band called the Grateful Dead. And I started following this band all up and down the East Coast. And I was literally at times living on macaroni and cheese and marijuana in a tree trunk in places like West Virginia. Got thrown in jail in Louisiana. I don't remember how I got there, but I ended up in jail. My friend bailed me out and we left the state, just wandering, doing what we wanted to do, living our lifestyle, having relations with women all up and down the East Coast. It was a mess, an absolute mess. But I didn't think anything of it. Eventually, of course, at this point, as is obvious, I dropped out of high school. At this point, I'm not going to school anymore. Dropped out. My hair at that point was all the way down to my belt. Got an earring. Still have my tattoo on my shoulder. I got one of those. I barely remember getting the tattoo. Just a life cycle of death, of absolute death. And I knew that if I continued in that I would die. And there came a certain point where I started to live with my parents again, not because I wanted to, because I had nowhere else to go. And they suggested that I go to another rehabilitation center. And somewhat willingly, I went. And this one was to be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I went, but it didn't work. As soon as I got in, the people that were in there, we started talking about old times, telling war stories of drug, you know, nights and all those things. Well, the day I got out, after having been there for about 6 or 7 weeks, I relapsed, went into the same lifestyle, got worse, started doing more drugs and heavier amounts, and it just got worse and worse and worse. Got a sexually transmitted disease, one that you can get rid of, thank the Lord. Got fired from a couple jobs, was continuing the same thing. Then there came one night in 1992 when I knew that my life would radically change, that something was going to happen in my life that was going to be a life-changing experience, that Don Calloway was going to die. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't even understand it. I knew nothing about what was going to happen, but I knew that something was going to happen in my life this one particular night that would change me. I didn't know if it was a who. I didn't know if it was a person, a thing, a what. I wasn't certain because I didn't have any religion. I didn't know what it would be, but I knew that my life could not continue the way it was. It was a life of death because I remember times laying on the sidewalk after having done so much crack that my heart felt like it was going to come out of my chest, beating so much. Or doing LSD where everything is melting and people look like turtles. I knew that I was going to die. And by the way, at that point, my parents had moved down back to Virginia Beach area in Virginia. And that was 10 years ago from when I had been baptized 10 years old in Virginia Beach. So we had come full circle back to where my whole life had kind of gone astray. Well, I knew this one night in 1992 that I had to stay home. Something was coming, but I didn't know what. So I stayed at home, and that was rare. Believe me, people were calling me, aren't you coming out? Aren't you gonna go partying? What's her name's waiting for you? And I said, no. And they were asking why, and I said, I don't know, I just can't do it. Stayed in my room, and naturally, because I didn't know what to do, I got bored almost immediately. So I went out into the hallway, and I wanted to look at some kind of magazine that had pictures, like a National Geographic. I was always into nature, things like that. So I wanted to pass the time waiting for the death, whatever it was, to happen. Well, I went out into the hallway, looked at the bookshelf, and there was nothing like a National Geographic. There were poetry, Shakespeare, encyclopedias, things like that. But there was one book that caught my eye. It caught my eye because I didn't even know how to pronounce what was on the binding. I looked at the binding and it said, "The Queen of Peace visits Medjugorje." Believe me, I didn't even know a queen. Who's a queen of peace? Medjugorje. I didn't even know how to pronounce the word. I had no idea what this. I thought, did my parents learn a foreign language or something? What is this? So I took the book off the shelf and I thought, well, okay, maybe this is something of religion, so I better not let anyone see me reading this. I opened up the book, right in the middle were the pictures, and I looked at these pictures, real pictures, not paintings, but pictures that were taken, and I didn't know what to make of them. I saw 6 little children, hands folded like this, looking up into nothing. And I thought to myself, what is this all about? So I read the caption below the pictures, and it was to the effect of, the little children are now seeing the Blessed Virgin Mary. This was a whole new language, a whole new world to me. The Blessed Virgin Mary? What's a blessed? Who's a virgin? Who's this Mary? I was so raw in my understanding of religion and of Christianity, I didn't even know who Mary was. I didn't know there was a Virgin Mary. I didn't know who Jesus was. I thought Jesus was like Santa Claus, something to make the kids happy. I had no idea. I was raw, just a blank sheet. And I looked at it, and I looked at the pictures, and I saw a cross. And I had remember seeing crosses on TV, TV evangelist, and I had an aunt who was religious. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, this is something about Christianity. And I flipped and I looked at some more of the pictures, and it was a whole language that I did not understand. The word, the rosary, communion, Eucharist, I had no idea of this whole language, and it fascinated me. And I thought to myself, well, I've told myself I'm not going out. Let's see what this is all about. Let's see what my parents are into, because I think they've joined a cult, and this seems kind of odd that these little children are seeing something that I don't see. Let's see what this is about. I started at the very beginning of this book. This book was written by Father Joseph Pelletier. And I began at the very beginning, and there were words I did not understand, concepts I had no idea about, sacraments, transubstantiation, all this Catholic language, I didn't have a clue. And yet I began to read, and I consumed that book. And it's not a small book. It's a book about that thick. I read that whole book by about 3:45, 4 o'clock in the morning. I ate that book like it was life, more important than the air I was breathing. When I closed that book in the wee hours of the morning, I said to myself, in the heart that I had left, that is true. Everything in that book is true. And I don't know who this Virgin Mary is, but this is the woman I have always been searching for in my life. I've sought perfect love everywhere. Ever since I was a young boy, I just sought it in the wrong way. And I said, everything that that woman has said in that book, because she said that she's not God, but she's pointing to this Jesus I've always heard about. I remember when I was a little boy hearing about this Jesus, and Jesus loves me, yes I know, for the Bible tells me so. You know, everybody hears that when they're growing up as a little boy. I did. And I remember saying to myself, she's saying that he is God. Whatever this Blessed Virgin Mary says, I'll buy it. Hook, line, and sinker. Whatever she says, that is the truth. I've never encountered someone so beautiful as this woman, so perfect, flawless. And I didn't see her. Her picture wasn't there. They had statues of her. And I said to myself, this woman has captivated my heart. She's mine. I give myself totally to this woman. Now, I still didn't know practically or concretely what that would mean, the application of it. So when my mother woke up in the morning, early in the morning, I went to her. I didn't sleep that night. I went to my mother. She woke up and she's coming down the hallway. And I say, Mom, I want to talk to a... I couldn't get it out. I couldn't say it. And she said, Donnie, what? And I said, Mom, I want to talk to a... I still couldn't say it. She said, what are you trying to tell me? I said, Mom, I want to talk to a Catholic priest, okay? And she said, what? I said, yes, I read a book last night and I've got to talk to a Catholic priest now. She said, what book did you read? And I got it and I showed it to her. And she said, you read that book? I said, Mom, I ate this book like it was life. I said, I can't believe what I read last night. This is unbelievable stuff. And she went immediately to the phone book and tried to call a Catholic priest. It was early in the morning and she couldn't get one. And the ones that she could reach, they weren't able to meet with me immediately. So at that point, they were living on a military base down in Southern Virginia. And I knew that there was a chaplain, that there was a Catholic church on the base. So I took it of my own initiative to go early in the morning. So I went, and out the door I went. Something was happening in my life. I skipped like a little boy. For the first time in my life, ever since I was a young kid, I ran across that military base with joy in my heart, and my long hair was flowing in the wind, and there are Marines, tough guys, marching by me doing their cadence, and I'm running across the base like a little boy. And I know that they were probably thinking, how'd this guy get on the base? Did he jump the fence? Well, you know, what's this all about? Well, I ran into that church, and I asked, where is the Catholic priest? And they showed me the Catholic priest. And he was a military chaplain, a Navy chaplain. And he sat me down, and he was somewhat taken aback. Who's this long-haired hippie in front of him just pouring out all this stuff? Because literally, I was just making a confession publicly. I didn't care. I just threw it out. And he slowed me down. He said, whoa, 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 whoa. Where did you come from? Who are you? What can I do for you? It's coming too fast at me, too fast. So he said, look, I'm going to celebrate Mass. Once again, a language I did not know. I thought, he's going to celebrate air? I don't understand what he's talking about. I don't understand this language. So he said, look, go into the church, sit in the back. Please sit in the back. Don't disturb anybody. Just be quiet. And after I say Mass, I'll talk to you. So I was like, great. So I went into the church. And I remember walking in and hearing these Filipino ladies, God bless Filipino ladies, saying the same thing over and over and over. And, you know, it came to my mind, you know, this is kind of weird. What is going on here? I don't understand this. And they kept doing it and doing it. And finally, one of these Filipino ladies way in the front, and they were all kneeling. She turned around and she had something in her hand that I didn't know. It looked like a necklace or something. And she said, young man, do you want to pray the next decade? Once again, a decade means 10 years to me. And I was like, no, I don't. And she said, well, and she mentioned, I think, what the mystery was, which I didn't know. And she said, come on, pray the next decade. And in my heart, I was saying, can't you see who I am? Don't you see how wretched, how broke, how evil I am? No, I don't want to pray. You know, I didn't feel worthy. And so she turned around and they continued their prayer and it ended. Then came the moment that changed my life. The priest came out and he wasn't dressed like he was when I met with him in his office. He had on robes and I thought this was going to be some kind of a theater act or something. You know, I was thinking, oh, cool. What's going to happen here? He's going to do some kind of performance up there. What is this all about? Maybe he's a hippie too. Yeah, I didn't know what he was doing. I had no idea. First time of ever experiencing a liturgy. No idea what I was seeing. Well, he came out and I was amazed. All of these ladies were standing at the same time, sitting at the same time, saying the exact same thing at the same pace. Unbelievable. Had never experienced anything like that in my life. Literally, I was looking for strings above them thinking, this is a puppet show. How is this possible? How do they know? Are they reading each other's mind to know, to do this all in unison? Blew me away. And then the priest was up in front. And he bent over what I thought was just a table, and he said something I could barely hear, but something that I remembered from the book that I had read the night before. And he said, take this, all of you, and eat it. This is my body, which will be given up for you. And he elevated this little white circle, it appeared to me, and I knew. I had an infusion of knowledge from God Almighty that was Jesus Christ. And I worshiped. I worshiped and adored with every fiber of my being. And I was in awe. I knew that that's what was being talked about in that book. I knew. Oh, I was in love. I wanted to rush down that aisle so passionately and receive him because I saw all these ladies getting up and going and taking him, receiving him. Oh, I burned with jealousy. I wanted him so bad, but I knew I couldn't. I was not worthy. And so I went to the priest after Mass. And once again, I unloaded on him. Father, that was Jesus, right? You better tell me that was Jesus, Father. It was, right? And he said, yes. How do you know that? And once again, he was just overwhelmed by my just immediate knowledge of what was going on there and the questions and the passion that I had. And so he said, look, it's overwhelming me. I'm going to give you some things. Come back tomorrow and we'll talk again. So he gave me a crucifix, a picture of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and a picture of John Paul II. I had no idea what these things really were, but I took them, embraced them, and I left. And I skipped back home across the military base, happy as a kid, went into my room, tore up everything in my room, tore down all my posters, got rid of everything. I went to the kitchen, got 7 big black trash bags, went into my room and threw away everything. I threw away blankets, I threw away pillows, I threw away everything except a couple pairs of clothes. Just chucked them out. Into the front yard they went. And my mother is standing in the hallway just smiling. And I know in her heart she was saying, "Thank God." And I went, I put the crucifix on my door, hung the picture of John Paul II up on my wall. I didn't even really know who he was. Put the Sacred Heart picture up in front of my dresser drawer. And I waited. I was thinking, okay, now I have to wait till tomorrow to talk to the priest again. What do I do now? So I thought, why don't I do what those little kids are doing in those pictures? So I went back to the book, opened the book, and I said, it said the little children are praying. And I thought to myself, why don't I pray? See what that's all about. I don't ever remember having said a prayer in my life. So I didn't know how to pray. I had no clue. So I looked at the kids, the little 6 children, and they were on their knees and their hands were like this. And so I thought, well, that's what I'll do. So instinctively, I pulled out my dresser drawer in front of the picture of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. I folded my hands like this and I knelt down and I just looked. And I thought to myself, okay, ready. Pray. You know, who does this? How does this work? I had no idea. Does it come from me? Do I see this Blessed Virgin Mary like they're supposed to be seeing her? What happens next? I didn't know. And so I just looked, and as I looked, my eyes focused on the picture of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And he was pointing in a gesture of blessing, kind of pointing to his heart. And as I looked at that image, something within me knew that that was the God-man who died for me on the cross, whose blood was shed for me, and that pierced heart that I was looking at was for me, and that everything that the Virgin Mary was saying to those children was for somebody like me. And I started to cry like I never cried in my life. I never cried like that when I was a baby. I cried so profusely that the few clothes that I had in that dresser drawer were soaking wet. You could have wrung them in a bucket and filled it up. Every ounce of fluid in my body was coming out of my eyes, and they were tears of repentance. Oh, I was so remorseful for the things that I had done. I was thinking of all the girls I had abused, all the women that I had, you know, done things with, all my friends that I had robbed, stolen from, lied, cheat, my parents, my brother, everything all came on me at once. And I was so, so remorseful. And yet at the same time, I knew there was hope. And I was crying tears of joy. In the midst of the pain and of the just tears flowing, I was almost, almost laughing, because I knew that there was hope for me, that this image, this Jesus Christ, the Messiah, the God-man, died for me, and he loved me. And oh, I was so happy. And I remember after kneeling there for I don't know how long, but it felt like an eternity, I closed the drawer, I laid down in the bed. I didn't actually have a bed, I slept on a couch. I laid down and I rested like a baby. For the first time in years, I felt free. Oh, it was an unbelievable peace that overcame me. And as I laid down, I remember all of a sudden, something happened to me that I don't know how to explain. I almost don't know how to put it in words. Right on the verge of sleep, something came from behind me and knocked me out of my body. Literally knocked me out. My body was still there on the couch, but my soul, my spirit, I don't know what it was leaving, was going away. And I didn't know what to do. A great fear, a fear that was paralyzing, took over. I couldn't say anything. I couldn't move. I couldn't do anything. The only thing I knew how to do, the only person at that point that I knew to cry out to, was Mary. And so I cried out spiritually, because I could not say a thing, a word. If I could have, I would have screamed for my mother to come running, because I was paralyzed with fear and I was leaving. literally going out of the room. So I screamed with everything I had, "Mary!" And all of a sudden, I was thrust back into my body with the force of a universe come crashing down upon me, just bam, back into my body. And I heard a feminine voice, the most beautiful feminine voice I've ever heard that I will ever hear. And it said this to me, "Donnie, I am so happy. No one called me Donnie but my mother, and I knew who that was." It was a voice so sweet and tender. It was as though the voice were liquid, love. It was unbelievable. And I rested that night sleeping like a little baby in his mother's arms. I woke up, went back to the church, and there began my whole conversion. Everything stopped. I no longer desired cigarettes. All my addictions, all my feelings, and it wasn't so much that I was addicted. I don't like to use that word. But the things that I was driven towards, the things that I lived for, it all stopped. I had no repercussions of all those years of abuse in my body, no desire to go out and do all that stuff anymore. Even the way that I began to look at women changed. I don't even know how to explain this. I almost wanted to try and look at a woman in an impure way, and I could not. God had just simply changed me, and it was unbelievable. That was what I call my honeymoon experience with the living God, my spouse. He just took me into the bridal chamber and showered me with love, just overwhelmed me with his love. It was unbelievable. And I went and talked to the priest day after day. I began to live in the church. I had no job. I slept in the pew. I would go there and make the Stations of the Cross until I just wore myself out. With the money that I would get from my mother, I'd go to the store and buy flowers and lay them at the statue of the Blessed Virgin Mary and say, "I love you." I started to wear scapulars, pray the rosary night and day, just started reading everything about saints, everything I could get my hands on. I would even go to stores in like a mall and get a book. And instinctively, I would start reading a book about angels or about something or other. And I would know that some of these books were not good. They were talking about reincarnation or about things that were just wrong, about New Age type of practices. And instinctively, because the mother's mantle was over me, protecting me from those things, I would know that is not of the Blessed Virgin Mary. That is not the way that she has pointed me. That is not the real Jesus. And I kept asking Mary, "Show me the real Jesus," because I would watch TV and I'd see the TV evangelists and I'd see all these people presenting a Jesus. But I wanted the real one, the one that I had come to know and cried my eyes out. And Mary kept revealing him more and more to me. This is the real Jesus, the Jesus who established the church, the Pope, the Eucharist, all of these mysteries that I came to love passionately. And all that zeal that I pursued the world and the things of the flesh, I turned for Jesus. And I fell head over heels in love with Jesus. That night in 1992, when I read that book, The Queen of Peace Visits Medjugorje by Father Joseph Pelletier, that night and the next day, I experienced an infusion of knowledge about Catholicism. Things, words, terms a language I had never even been exposed to. I knew it was true. The Eucharist, never even heard of the word. I knew that was Jesus. Holy Communion, the Rosary, transubstantiation. I mean, this is a completely foreign language to me. I knew. I just had this insight that all of this is true and worthy of complete belief, complete assent, like the Pope. I knew when I heard about that, I knew that it had to be. It just seemed right that this was, in fact, the visible representative of Jesus Christ, the visible representative of my Father, who is God. I knew it. And eventually, within 9 months, I became a Roman Catholic. Within 1 year, not even being a Catholic for 1 year, I joined the religious community that I'm currently in, the Marians of the Immaculate Conception. When I came to discern a vocation, and believe me, that was still raw, I didn't really know what a vocation meant, but all I knew was that I loved Jesus as a spouse. He was my all, and I wanted to follow him. So I got a hold of a book called Your Choice, where all these different religious communities kind of show their goods, who they are. And it's, boy, I'd say it's probably about 200 postcards you can send away. I sent them all away. I didn't know what else to do, so I got a roll of stamps and sent them all away. Well, I got tons of information back. I didn't know what to do, but I knew that everything and the way that I had come to know Jesus was through Mary. So I said, Mary, I'm yours. If you want me to be a religious, to be a priest, it's got to be about you. You've led me to the real Jesus. You'll lead me and guide me. So I prayed and I said, of all of these, Mary, I'll send away to the ones that have your name in the title. And so that's what I did. Well, that was still quite a few. I sent those away. Got a lot of information back. So I said, Mary, I'm so in love with you, and I'm yours. I will be a Marian priest. Whatever you want me to do, it's for you. And so I said, how about I'll send those away that have your name in their title twice? An interesting way to discern a vocation, but Mary and the Holy Spirit worked through that. So I came to know the community that I'm in, the Marians of the Immaculate Conception. And that's how I came to my religious vocation in this blessed community that spreads divine mercy and love for Our Lady as the Immaculate Conception. I entered the religious community in 1993, the Marians of the Immaculate Conception. And because I had dropped out of high school, that meant that I had to do everything over. Believe me, I dropped out of high school, but literally I hadn't been going to school in my mind for years. I had just gone to, you know, go. So I had to learn everything. I had to learn history, grammar, math, everything over. I knew nothing. When I sent in my application to the community, my grammar and vocabulary and spelling were so horrendous. The vocation director said, I can't present this to the provincial council. Do you mind if I, quote, rewrite it so it's, you know, legible and it can be understood? You know, I had literally a sixth or seventh grade education. I knew nothing. And so, thank the good Lord, he rewrote it for me, truthfully, you know, with my words, but, you know, cleaned it up. And so when I came, they saw, you have to get your whole education over. So I actually, before I joined, I did get a GED right before I joined, which is equivalent to a diploma, but not really. They say it is, but it's not really. And so I joined the community in 93, started going to a community college in Maryland. And that was very difficult. When you're studying to be, you know, a religious in a community, having to go to a secular community college is very difficult because people don't appreciate what you're doing and they may try and entice you away from what you're doing. And, you know, when I came to know the Lord, he didn't take away my manhood. You know, I still had passions and desires. And so, yes, there was crosses and a lot of crosses in those days. And so I went through community college and, you know, the Lord is amazing. Because I ended up going to, I consider, the best Catholic university in the world. I went to Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio, and I graduated from there with a double major in philosophy and theology, got to study under Scott Hahn, Mark Miravalle, people I admire. And I took them for every class they taught and became very good friends with them to this day, especially with Mark Miravalle, a very good friend of mine, and learned from the masters, if you will. And God was just training me the whole way. And then I went to seminary And that was in 99. And so I would have to go to seminary for 4 years. And I had to study Greek and Latin and all these things that, you know, what am I? Here I am, a poor hillbilly, you know, a hippie, never having studied anything. And here I am studying Greek and Latin at a very prestigious seminary, the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C. In the Dominican House, the Dominicans are like the intellectual power of the church. These guys are smart. And here I am studying with them, and I got 2 degrees from them. And I finished a year early. I got a master's in divinity and an STB, a church degree, and graduated with honors. And now I'm studying for a licentiate, an STL, in Mariology. And it's just amazing. What I used to hate in studies, I now love, because it's not a matter of just learning for the head or to impart information, but to come to know the living God and to come to know Mary and to evangelize with the truth of the church and to have the opportunity now as a priest. I've only been a priest for a little more than 3 months, to use what I've been given to feed souls, you know, with what they haven't heard for the last 30 or 40 years. I find people don't even know what the Immaculate Conception is. They think it's the birth of Jesus. It's amazing. So all that education that I got, I thank God for. It was long and hard. 10 years is a long time, especially when you were a great sinner like I was. You're tempted all the time. Sometimes you think, Lord, remind me why I'm doing this, you know. And there were days I remember taking math classes at the community college thinking, okay, Lord, you're really going to have to help me because I hate math, you know. And even, you know, sometimes in theology, I would just think to myself, oh, Lord, you know, help me to get through this. Greek, you know, and all those things. I would be conjugating in my sleep, you know. It was just so difficult to study sometimes. But I knew the end would come. That day when the bishop would lay hands on me and basically say, go out and preach the good news. And all that 10 years was great. Because, you know, wine that ages over time is better. And a longer formation for me was essential. If I had only had like a 4 to 6 year formation, who knows what would have happened? You know, I may not have been mature enough in my conversion to go out there and to preach and to know the truth and to say it clearly, passionately, and with clarity. And now with the education that I've got, I go out non-compromising, black and white, truth and darkness, you know, categories, none of this gray stuff. But apostolically, preaching apostolically, that's what we need. This is my first time in Medjugorje. I read a book about Medjugorje in 1992, and that was how I was introduced to Medjugorje. But this is the first time, 11 years later, that I've ever been here. And since that time, I certainly have fallen more in love with Mary, with Our Lady, with Jesus, with the Church, with the Pope, the Eucharist, everything that is good and true. And I have found that in the long years of my formation to be a priest, having been ordained a priest only a little longer than 3 months ago, May 31st of this year, 2003, that the messages that Our Lady has given here have impacted my whole life, my whole priesthood, my whole thrust as a disciple and as a priest of God has been deeply impacted by these messages. One of prayer. Mary calling me to pray, 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 to even fast, something that I thought would be so difficult, but as I came to find out was a purifying power in my life, and not just for me, but a power that enables me to be able to preach fearlessly the gospel, to be able to touch souls with truth, because that time of purification for myself in fasting, in conversion, in prayer, allows me to go out and to bear witness to the truth. Mary's messages have changed my life, and I can tell you honestly, I know of numerous seminarians in the United States, where I come from, who in these days have been deeply touched by the messages of Medjugorje. Many, many. There are about 9 men in my community right now in formation in the seminary. I would say that almost all of them, actually I would say 8 of them, I'm thinking about them in my mind right now, 8 of them have been touched by Medjugorje. 8 of them, passionate men, men who love the truth. Everything that I thought that Medjugorje would be, having read about it, lived the messages, being here now for the first time, it's everything that I thought it would be and more. I come here as a priest. I tried to get here for 11 years as a seminarian, and it never worked out. But Our Lady made it all come together in about 6 hours. One day, a priest came out to me and said, "Do you want to go to Medjugorje?" And I said, "Father, that's a no-brainer. Of course I want to go to Medjugorje." And he said, "Well, let me try and see what I can do." He came back later to me that afternoon and said, "All clear. You're good to go. The superiors have given permission. We've got the money. You've got time off from your ministry. We're going to go." I said, "Praise God. Praise Our Lady. I can't believe this is actually happening. And now that I'm here, I'm a priest. Here I am, a Roman Catholic priest in Medjugorje. The whole reason that I came to know Jesus, that I came to know the church, came to know myself as a man and as a priest. Oh, it's unbelievable. I heard confessions the other day. I went next to St. James Church and stepped into the confessional, put on my stole, put out my sign for English, and heard confessions for 2.5 hours. Unbelievable. The length of time that some of those people had been away from the church, the things that they just shared, to get it out, to unburden their sorrows, their hearts that had went away from the Lord, unbelievable. For me as a priest to experience that, to be a part of that, is unimaginable. I was actually almost crying in the confessional myself. And I went away from that experience knowing, this is why I'm here. This is why Mary called me to be a priest. So many souls in these days are addicted to drugs, have alcohol problems, have addictions to sexual sins. Many, many people, pornography, all kinds of things. And I have found that through my life of sin in the past, now being a priest, I know what they're talking about. And I can talk to them intimately, knowing exactly what they're experiencing, the things that they talk about, the experiences that they've had. Now I know. What I have gone through, I can now give away and absolve. I absolve you in the name of the church, and may your sins be forgiven. Go in peace. That is the gift that God, through Mary, has given to me through Medjugorje, to be a priest. To be a priest of the church.
This and other audios can be found on our website, medjugorje.org.